Hello everyone, hello football fans around the world. Welcome to the Squawker Talker. My name is Nick English and my word, do we have a lot of football to cover for you today. This isn't like the dark, dark days of the international break where we were scrambling around for talking points. Actually, Mo, who's one of our guests today. Hello, Mo.
Hi, Nick. How you doing?
I'm good. Thank you. You're just saying this is going to be a beast of a podcast.
It's going to be a beast.
Well, let's see what our other two guests think. Also joining us is Greg Johnson. Hello, Greg.
Hey up, Nick. How you doing?
Hey up. Hello.
Manchester's league. Yeah, no, I brought a bit of it back.
You brought a bit of it back. Let's watch Coronation Street later. Also joining us is the mystical, wondrous world of Rory Briggs. Hello, Rory.
It's top of the morning to you.
Fantastic. Yes. How are you doing?
Good, yeah. Good weekend. 3 points. It's good.
Yeah? Okay. People don't know who you support. That could be anything.
No, it's going to leave it open.
just 3 points, but generally. Yeah. Let's start off by talking about the narrative of the weekend, the narrative that delivered, Mo. Manchester United losing 2-1 to Man City, but what a game.
It was a great game. Guardiola's 8th win against Jose Mourinho in their 17th match. He completely dominated him for most of the game, as per usual. Mourinho looked a bit out of his depth, as per usual. Had a very nice rally, as per usual. It was all kind of familiar, but obviously completely different now, because it's Man United, Man City. Different clubs, different statures. There's no political element to the rivalry now, because of course they're not Barcelona and Real Madrid. But it was, he got it wrong in the first half, Mourinho. As much as Pep got it all right and everything, Mourinho just made so many mistakes. 4-2-3-1, as I've been saying forever now. It's just a disaster of a formation. Doesn't work, doesn't catch it to Paul Pogba. Puts him, restricts him, and doesn't allow him to shine. He can still play well. He did actually did okay. But, I mean, it was a bad mistake for Mourinho to play that formation. He adjusted well for second half, but the damage was done. City were too far ahead, and they were too confident in their control. They looked like they were on a different planet the first half.
Greg, I mean, Paul Pogba was getting savaged on Twitter after the game. What a waste of money. It's the classic thing to say after a record signing of that nature. Was he really that bad during the game?
No. I think the system didn't help him at all, as Mo alluded to there. But it wasn't just about the formation and the shape. Pogba was basically, people say he was positionally ill-disciplined, and he was. He was almost playing as if he was playing in a middle three, and he was playing a middle two, which is poor. But he was the person doing the most on the ball, taking it around players. He did some beautiful pirouettes and stuff on the field. Now I was actually at the game and watching it from the stands. You could see all the stuff he was doing. The problem was that he wasn't able to do anything with the ball after that moment. The system that Pep had set up was so good that it doesn't matter how individually exciting Pogba was in those moments. They just couldn't find a way through, because there was just a tactical mismatch. And unfortunately, Pogba, with his price tag and his want to become a Ballon d'Or winner, he's going to be judged on his end product of goals and assists and all that kind of thing. And I mean, if you look at the numbers, he had a terrible, terrible game, if you go by the basic arithmetic. But there was more to him than that. I just think he like so many other individuals, which Mourinho was relying on to win the game, it just didn't work with the clash of systems, which ultimately decided it.
Mo, another goal for Zlatan, who's irrepressible. He's now scored in, at least 5 major derbies. I mean, he's got Manchester Derby now, Milan Derby, Classico, Le Classique, De Classica in the Netherlands. I mean, he always turns up in these big games, doesn't
don't
he?
Don't forget Derby d'Italia, the Barcelona Derby, which he settled as well. I mean, this guy he lives for the big games. He didn't have the best of games. His supply was non-existent, and he thrives best when there's movement around him. And I mean, of course, as we've been discussed before, Rooney's not really the ideal complement to him, but he can always be relied on for a goal. That finish as well, as much as it was Claudio Bravo's hilarious mistake, that finish was incredible.
Very, very Cantona versus Liverpool 90.
Yeah, instinctive, athletic, the kind of thing only really he could do.
Yeah, fair enough.
I mean, that was great, but I've just got to take issue on the no service thing. I mean, Wayne Rooney gets pelters every single week, whether he does well or not, and Wayne Rooney's actually one of the better players on the field for United in the derby, and he set Zlatan up for 2 other chances, which Zlatan either scuffed or didn't quite get the hit on them. And I mean, it might be harsh to say, but this is a match where the two sides are out-fought, and sorry, the City basically outclassed United, but you need your big striker to put them away. I mean, you saw, we could talk about letting Balotelli for Nice against Marseille. I don't think he got one shot off target, whereas Zlatan, he didn't quite... I mean, it does sound like a harsh thing to say, but Rooney did set up Zlatan for a couple more times, and if he would have put him away, United could have even been ahead at half-time.
Rooney did play well, I'll say that. Which I don't say very often.
But he didn't give Zlatan any service? I mean, you can't have it both ways. Come on.
It's Rory, I mean, one of the big reasons that Zlatan's excellent goal was overshadowed was because of one man who absolutely dominated the first half. That's Kevin De Bruyne. I mean, is he the best player in the league right now?
Yeah, I mean, we need to talk about Kevin. It seems like for this whole year it's going to be his story. He's going to do, player of the season stuff. And quite rightly in that position with Guardiola, allowing him to thrive. But I think United just made it easy as well. Like that amount of space he was allowed to have for that first goal, didn't make good reading for Mourinho.
This is the match where De Bruyne's season almost started. He's been good previously, but I think he was a bit overshadowed by David Silva because he looked a little bit more like he wanted the free roll rather than two of the free rolls in the team. Whereas against United, it all came together for him. Like, I think we're going to now see this is where De Bruyne is just going to go to that next level now. Like, he looked like the man that City's whole attack was almost like orbiting at one point. His movement was fantastic. His decision making was brilliant. He's a constant threat against United, and yeah, couldn't cope with him. Yeah,
let's focus. Sorry,
no.
I am coming to you. Don't worry. Let's focus more on City and what they did well, and specifically, Greg alluded to it there, was the use of David Silva almost, in a sort of a deep playmaking role behind Kevin De Bruyne. That was crucial to the control of the game, wasn't it?
Yeah, he put Silva and De Bruyne as interiors, as central midfielders, essentially, and all season. And they've both looked really good. Silva instinctively has hit the ground running, because I think he's more accustomed to playing that sort, because obviously he's played number 10, mm-hmm. and so he was just moving deeper. He's so comfortable on the ball, and he's Spanish, raised in the Spanish system, so he understands Guardiola a lot more. I think De Bruyne is adapting to it, but De Bruyne looks like the kind of all-world central midfielder that Guardiola needs, really dominating. But Silva's a perfect complement, because when De Bruyne runs forward, Silva can then sit and aid Fernandinho keep the ball. When De Bruyne drops deep, Silva can then make the runs forward. He's a perfect counterbalance to De Bruyne.
Rory, we're talking obviously before the start of the game that, the big change in the team for Pep Guardiola was he knocked off Joe Hart to Turin. He said, "Go on over there. I don't want you in my team." Doesn't want the ego. He brought in Claudio Bravo, and it was Bravo 2-0.
Yeah,
it
didn't work for the Chilean. But
some great distribution, but some seriously questionable decision making.
You've got also question like why Guardiola would say after the game he had a brilliant. He'd never seen a greater debut than Bravo's, and there must be some he's clearly trying to keep him on side.
It might
keep
his confidence.
It's psychological. But, he did this in El Clasico after Victor Valdes gave the ball to Karim Benzema 30 seconds in and Real Madrid scored. He basically said Victor Valdes was the best player on the pitch today. He was key because he kept passing after he made that mistake. So he's just trying to give the guy confidence. He probably shouldn't have started him, just coming back from the international break, first game for City. And he really looked like he was trying to prove something.
I'm obviously a neutral, but I was in the Stretford End for the game and in a journalistic capacity. And every single time Bravo got the ball and he went to do a cold kick, the general chance came and you large person followed. He's a professional footballer, he should be used to that, but he looked quite rattled by it. They really yanked his chain, and I think that early mistake, and also going in on Rooney as well, he definitely did not look settled. And I'm not trying to be all parochial and little English here, but maybe there is an element to the Premier League and the kind of, maybe it's only a Manchester Derby thing. He's not going to get that every week against other teams, but it was a big game. But I think he's going to have to kind of get used to maybe the kind of bluntness of the fans in England, maybe. I mean, obviously, Real Madrid, Barcelona, they aren't short of venom and stuff for the opposition's players. But yeah, he didn't look happy with the treatment from the fans behind him in the second half.
Fair enough. I mean, he's got a big Champions League game coming up against Borussia Mönchengladbach. Rory, what do you rate a City's chances? Mönchengladbach not with the best start to the season.
They beat them 4-2 last time in the group stage last season. And Sterling actually scored twice that game, so he's going to be back, fit for that for encounter. But Gladbach also are now weakened. They've lost Xhaka, they've lost Nordveit, they've also lost. They've signed Kramer. They've kept De Hood, which is a big one, but he didn't really influence that game last time out.
He's still young. He's only just come into the team now, really. Yeah,
yeah. I think he's going to really go on to strength this season. But yeah, I think City will find it much easier.
10th in the table.
And Freiburg as well, newly promoted.
Everyone's favourite hipster club. Let's move on. Let's talk a little bit about Liverpool swatting aside the champions of England in front of the new main stand. It looks like the birth of a partnership between Sturridge and Mane. Firmino also impressing. Greg, your thoughts on Liverpool's attack? I mean, really fluid, aren't they?
I mean, it's what we've all been waiting for, really. I mean, Mane's been like the secret ingredient to Liverpool's attack all season, and now we're finally seeing Sturridge integrated as well. Last season, the question was, can Firmino and Sturridge play together? And they often look like they wanted to be the figureheads of two different systems. It wasn't quite working. Interestingly, when Divock Origi played with them in like a front three, that actually did work. And I think it's because Origi, a bit like Mane, he's got that extra pace. He does the running off the ball. It kind of allows them to both coexist in a way that works. And I think we saw that again, but at a higher level. I mean, I wrote that article, which we all laughed at the time, but I said Mane could be like Marco Reus for Klopp at Liverpool, and I think we're seeing it now. Like, it just the running he does, the directness, the threat he has as an individual, and how he links into the team moves coming from deep as well. I mean, the whole thing with Liverpool was the movement of the entire team. They just look so threatening. It was almost they're starting to play that kind of automatic Klopp football that they need with no hesitation. Everyone knows where they need to go. Everyone needs what they need to do, and they're going to hit people hard and quick. And yeah, Leicester just could not cope.
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. You look at the second goal was just a masterpiece, basically. Lucas, I mean, he played, apart from the colossal, hilarious, hysterical mistake that he made to give Jamie Vardy a goal, actually played pretty well at centre-back. Strode out of defence, beautiful pass, looked like Gerard Piquet, bisecting the lines of Leicester lines. Not Firmino comes deep, knocks it back. There's a space behind Firmino now. Jordan Henderson flings it into that space. Sturridge coming off the left, because him and Firmino had swapped positions. It was brilliant. Coming off the left, beautiful diagonal run onto the ball. Mane sees this, boom, runs straight, then runs behind Sturridge and Simpson. Sturridge, amazing back heel. Mane tucks it in. It was a masterpiece of a goal. And it just showed, like what Greg's saying, this is the automatisms, this is the automatic clock football coming to bear. The thing is still not fully there, because Sturridge, I mean, he played a brilliant part in the first two goals, but he didn't use the ball well, gave it away a lot. Really terrible pass completion, 61%, I think. So there's still a way to go with him, but if they can get him integrated, I still think Origi might be a better choice, to be honest. But they're looking so good. They just really, I mean, with no European football this season, don't rule them out for the title. They absolutely destroyed Leicester.
Rory, have Leicester been found out to a certain degree? I mean, I can't remember last season any attack causing them that much trouble, except maybe that home game where they really struggled against Arsenal defensively.
Yeah, I think the big gaping hole is Kante missing. It's not worked out for them. I think they thought they could work it out with keeping Drinkwater there, keeping players there. But again, it's like defence couldn't cope. The pace of it, something that Matt Kante would have broken up as well. I don't think, and also that camera angle didn't work. So, yeah,
no, it looked like a Football Manager.
It was Ewood Park-esque.
It was unusual. Liverpool scored 50 goals in the Premier League in 2016, more than any other side. Watch out for them at getting more goals like that. Let's move on to Chelsea, who secured a bizarre 2-2 draw against Swansea at home. And the standout name, once again, Greg, is Diego Costa. He always gets the headlines. And, you know, he got the headlines again. Fantastic bicycle kick. A bit of an all-round performance. He got, you know, the poop kicked out of him as well.
Most fouled player in the Premier League this season.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. And that's sort of probably what Conte wanted out of him, right?
Yeah. Well, maybe not to the extent that referees aren't noticing those fouls a lot of the time. Yeah. By the sounds of it. Because I think, I mean, those are only the fouls that were reported. I feel that those offences have been underreported on Diego Costa. He's a victim of his own reputation. I think people now think when he is actually fouled, he's been a bit of a drama queen. But actually, I mean, he's so combative. I mean, he gives as much as he takes as well. But, I mean, Chelsea last season, that's almost what they were. I know I don't want to sound like a cliche, but it's what they were missing. They were missing that fight, that bit of, you know, tenacity up front. And Diego Costa is exactly what you want. I mean, Conte, part of what's great about him and as a manager and the teams he wants is that he wants that mentality, he wants that intensity. And, I mean, when he's on form, there aren't many strikers more intense, more tenacious than Diego Costa. And he got Chelsea out of a tight spot again. But, you know, it's the question with Chelsea isn't how good they are going forward, because, I mean, Hazard looks great. I mean, he was a little bit quiet this weekend, but he still looked very interesting on the ball. It's their defence. And I'm sure we're going to come on to that soon. But, They haven't quite built the wall that he needs to yet, Conte.
Yeah. Speaking about the defence, Mo, an interesting tweet from Gary Cahill after the game, claiming he was fouled in the build-up to Swansea's second. He said you could see the foul from the moon.
Well, I mean, you know, you could see how bad his performance was from the moon as well. Gary Cahill is as underqualified to play central defence for Chelsea as he is to tweet after games.
I think he's allowed to tweet, to be fair. Well, I've never passed any exams on
Twitter. Underqualified.
Is there wife on the moon?
These are the questions we need to be asking. Look, Gary Kay was not a good defender. He was obviously fouled in the build-up for that goal. But you know what? Stuff happens. He's fouled people before and gotten away with it. You know, get over it. He's not playing well. I think that's part of his problem. I think if he'd played well and that had happened, he would have been like, oh, well, whatever, rolled it off. But he didn't play well. They didn't win the game. They have massive defensive shortcomings. That's why he signed David Luiz. That's why he signed Marcos Alonso. That's why he's looking at Martin Caceres. I think they need to play a back three with all three of those people. And none of these rabble that around right now. When Kurt Zouma gets back, he can get in the team, but the current defenders aren't good enough. Conte's system is great. His defensive system is fantastic. They've all learned it. They're just not very good at it. So, like,
lead to issues.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Cahill's lucky to be in the team still. They're trying to get all the central defenders in, but that didn't work out and got Luiz. So, yeah, it's not going to last. He can moan all he wants.
It's a real shift away in terms of philosophy for Chelsea. I mean, away from the more dour Mourinho era. They created the most chances in the Premier League last weekend, Greg. They look like a force to be reckoned with. But, I mean, Swansea just keep picking up points and surviving the Premier League. They look quite comfortable again in the league this season. How do they keep doing this?
I don't know, to be honest with you, because I was really worried about them after the summer transfer window. I mean, they got Fernando Llorente, but I don't know. I mean, they still look a goal scorer short to me, but as you say, they keep making it happen. I mean, Jefferson Montero is an excellent player. I mean, the pace he's got can trouble any fullback. So they still have got people, especially like Sigurdsson as well, who scored at the weekend, and Leroy Fer, who's looked like a great signing, actually. So he's still got these like option players, these guys that can make an impact. But I just worry about when the kind of adrenaline goes a bit in the middle of the season, are they going to be able to have that like totemic goal scorer up front like they used to have with Wilfred Bonny or even with Michu to kind of see them through, because they really struggled without that kind of player last season.
Let's take the district line all the way to Victoria and then go northbound up towards Finsbury Park. Let's talk about Arsenal getting a late penalty to beat Southampton. Starting slowly again, Mo. A classic trait of recent Arsenal performances after Wenger. A funny tweet from Ian McIntosh during the game. He said, Arsenal started slowly, have gone a goal down. But they're now on top and dominating the game and look more likely to score. I feel like I've written this match report 100 times before. I mean, frankly, it was a second half masterclass from Santi Cazorla, which saved them, wasn't it?
Yeah, he's a phenomenal, phenomenal footballer. And I still think the best way for Arsenal to go would be to go 4-3-3. And it almost Pep Guardiola-esque used Cazorla's, because he can do anything. He can literally, I mean, you know, play defensive midfield, okay, play attacking midfield, okay, play on the wing, okay, left foot, right foot, okay. He's just so good. Like, yeah. I mean, I'm starting to think if you play him in central defence, he'd actually be really good at it. Like, he's so talented, and it's like, they should use that multifunctional talent to basically balance out Mesut Ozil as a central midfielder with a defensive midfielder behind him and really just embrace the fluidity. But yeah, of course, Arsenal, classic Arsenal. Oh yeah, we're just going to come in here, swan around. Oh no, we're losing. Oh well, but actually start playing now. It's just how their season goes as well. You know, you'll be doing fine, then you'll lose a bunch of games. Oh wait, we might not make the Champions League. Well, better win some games now.
Rory, Cazorla's game by numbers was stunning. 94% passes completed, 3 chances created, 1 goal and 3 interceptions. I mean, they really rely on him. But I mean, in terms of Arsenal as a whole, how do you analyse that performance? Were they being harshly treated, or?
Oh yeah, it was. Well, they made it there. You know, it was a close run thing of their own making. If you think about the last season, the best performances at home, the United win was off the start straight away. You know, smash and grab. This was, you know, Southampton had a lot of possession in the first half, and they really soaked it up. And you're thinking, like, it's just going side to side when Arsenal had the ball. There wasn't anything in the middle for Ozil to really work with. You know, it was like an Ariana Grande song, like it was just side to side the whole time. But then the best compliment for Cazorla was, you know, he took that starring role from Ozil, really made it work, won the ball back a lot, you know, something. And alongside Coquelin, making that partnership come back to life. Kind of the best thing about that game, having rested Xhaka for PSG, that did actually work. But the rest of it upfield wasn't enough.
Brief point on the new signings: Mustafi and Perez made their Premier League bows. Mustafi completed more passes than any other player in the Premier League this season, but admittedly, a lot of them were to Hector Bellerin or Lauren Koscielny. He tried a couple of what we'd call daggers forward. Lucas Perez just didn't get much of the ball, did he?
Yeah, well, both of them passing-wise, I mean, Mustafi, great stat that, but he did make some kind of tricky decisions for himself. One was just a straight give a ball away, you know, short pass, and then that sort of smash bullet through the line to no one. The crowd did not enjoy that. And then Perez as well, he had 2 or 3 random flicks, and again, the crowd was not enjoying, you know, seeing Perez kind of not really understanding what the Arsenal way is yet. And also, position-wise, he was way on the left. Ozil wouldn't have liked that. Every time he looked up, he didn't see Perez. So that's one to work on, but it's certainly...
Maybe it's a symptom of how modern football fans are, but before Arsenal were interested in either of them, Mustafi was just a very good central defender in La Liga, and Perez was kind of like a bit of an obscurity, a good one, but obscurity. And then Arsenal come on the scene, and now Mustafi's apparently the best defender in Spain, and they're signing him. And Lucas Perez is like the greatest impact player, like the Iberian pinch has ever seen. It's ridiculous.
People have been talking about Mustafi as the best central defender in Spain since before Arsenal.
Yeah, but I've muted those people on Twitter.
Since before Arsenal were linked, Mustafi's been highly regarded for now.
He's not
solid
that
seasons.
Good, though. He makes the guy next to him look better than they are. He's a very good partner, but individually, I think he's not going to get found out. That's too harsh.
Wouldn't the point be that Arsenal's best defender is clearly Lauren Koscielny, and they need a capable partner next to him. It's quite a sound signing,
which is a reasonable argument.
Mustafi is what they needed. He's a defensive organizer, and he's someone that can be stable next to Koscielny while Koscielny goes around overhead kicking goals in all over the place.
Let's talk a little bit about Oriol Romeu, who was
who's
been Greg's on it. He's been phenomenal in Claude Puel's diamond so far, and then the 4-4-2 diamond that he's been playing. No matter how wide the strikers are. And he looked exceptional against Arsenal again, didn't he?
Absolutely. I mean, I've been waiting for this to happen for so long because I really liked him when he first came to Chelsea as well. He's like Andre Villas-Boas's like gift to the Premier League that never quite got appreciated. Like I honestly think he is a really exciting defensive midfield talent even now. I mean, I'm not sure how old he is. He's 26-ish now. He's kind of, you know, getting towards where he's the peak of his powers, I think.
Sounds about the right age.
Sounds about right, doesn't it? Yeah.
Footballers
we'll
have two
it.
Ages, 26,
exactly.
27.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We'll
he's like
a
queen,
it.
Yeah.
We'll
yeah.
go with it. But he was absolutely brilliant. I think he made the second most interceptions in the Premier League this weekend. Mm. Not much gets past him. Arsenal did, unfortunately, in the end. But I think, I mean, playing a diamond is a tricky thing to do for most midfielders. You really need to be on it. And I think in him and Højbjerg as well, he's been quite impressive as well. They've got two players there that really build around that. That system could really work for them.
Yeah, he's a La Masia product, obviously brought to Chelsea with high expectations, given the number six shirt. Didn't really fulfill them, although he got injured and Villas-Boas got sacked. So then he pretty much was just, you know, sitting on the bench watching Roberto Di Matteo flap his arms around. But, you know, now he's at Southampton. I think he's got a proper manager. He could go very far. He's got a really, really great football education. He's got he can read the game really well. He's more robust than most La Masia products, which is why
he's a big lad.
It's why he suits the Premier League. I think he's not quite as refined, but he could really, especially with someone as intelligent as Højbjerg, like Greg says, they could be a superb duo for Southampton. If Nathan Redmond can just, keep banging the goals in up front, Southampton can actually be pretty good this season, although they, of course, lost.
Plus, Romeu looks like Lurch from the Adams family, so...
a useful asset for any footballer. Rory, looking ahead to Tuesday, Arsenal face PSG, who have had a woeful start to the season. But obviously, the ace in the hole for PSG is that Unai Emery is their coach, who is some sort of European coaching cup format god.
Yeah, but it's all been Europa League, so this could work very much into Arsenal's favour.
He gets knocked out of the group stages, then he goes into Europa League and wins it.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's a sort of hidden agenda he's got.
So watch out Man United.
Yeah.
But thoughts for the game, Roy. Yeah.
I'm hoping that Arsenal will need Koscielny fit and firing. He's, you know, he came down at the end just before the penalty.
Got kicked in the eye,
didn't
he?
The eye, he's got a swollen face. So Wenger said it's a concern, so he could miss it, leaving Mustafi and... Gabriel is back in training, but I don't think he's going to be ready for that. So he'll be Holding and Mustafi together. So, Holding's been great in the league, but against PSG is a totally different story.
Having said that, though, one of the things I did admit with Mustafi is he does make the guy next to him better because he is very good organising things. So if I was an Arsenal fan, I wouldn't... I mean, obviously, it's not as good as having Koscielny there, but I think those two, could do it. They could do a job. Cavani is looking absolutely dreadful. So, be all right.
I mean, he was compared to Giroud by Petit. Manuel Petit, so he must be bad, yeah.
It's sad to see how far Cavani's fallen since leaving Napoli. It really is. He's just, looks kind of broken, doesn't he?
He does. He does look discouraged. Let's take a quick bus up to, well, actually, I was going to say up to Tottenham.
You can walk, actually.
But it was an away game, so it would be a hell of a bus to take him up to Stoke. Spurs absolutely annihilated Stoke, 4-0, absolutely purring, Kane on the score sheet, total dominance. Mo, perfect game for Pochettino. Doesn't get much better than that, does it?
Yeah, look, I mean, you know, finally they got the big man scoring. By that, I mean Son, of course. Harry Kane joining, whatever. But look,
quickest Spurs player to ever reach 50 Premier League goals. Only 90 games for Harry Kane.
Oh yeah, look, I mean, he's brilliant and he's really proved everyone wrong. Of course, August is done now, so he can start scoring goals again. But Heung-min Son is really a key player for Spurs because he's actually really good. Like, everyone forgot about him because they bought him last year and he didn't kind of had a kind of nondescript debut season. But, you know, we forget sometimes that, yes, modern football is great and everything, but, you know, players still need time to adapt. Some players do still need a full season at the new club to really get to grips with things, especially coming to the Premier League, which is just kind of relentless.
Take note, Manchester United fans.
Yeah, well, well, I mean, he plays the right formation, but anyway, yeah, Heung-min Son scoring goals is huge because he's phenomenal. He's a great goal scorer. And Spurs, what they lacked more than anything else was another goal scoring option. It was all on Harry Kane last season, really, or Dele Alli occasionally. And if he didn't score, I mean, now the fact they have two guys that can score goals, it's a game changer because Pochettino's defensive system, as we know, is phenomenal. What they need is help on the attacking end, and Son might actually give it to them.
Yeah, I think Poch's decision for Son is completely vindicated in that. I think beforehand, people weren't expecting him to start. He had an Olympics, you know, he did well, but, you know, he's not going to quite fit in straight away. But, you know, surprise people and then made you think, well, when's Janssen going to get a go if that's happening now?
I mean, Janssen's just a backup for Kane, isn't he, really? I mean, he'll come in and play the games that where Kane needs to be rested. I mean, he's literally just like, he plays like Kane, but he's not as good. So it's silly to try and combine them. You just use him when he's not there.
Greg, Stoke have been abject since the end of last season. I mean, they basically secured safety, then went on holiday for a month and a half, but they haven't gotten off their holiday. They're still on holiday. Has Hughes lost the dressing room? What's going on there?
The reason why Stoke weren't completely out of the picture last season was the former Jack Butland. The actual team didn't get started until maybe midway through the season. So, I mean, if we're going to allow Spurs to have the same pattern every season, well, why are we getting on Mark Hughes? This is how Stoke goes.
Yeah, but Spurs were challenging for the titles.
Yeah, but they fell off. They should have finished second. They fell behind Arsenal.
Plus, the Stoke
side, they had a terrible ending to the season.
The Stoke side is full of mavericks as well. This is the thing. You're never going to get a team with like people like Bojan and Arnautovic and Shaqiri going straight away. Like, these guys need time to get their stuff together.
Yeah, I mean, Rory, they created the joint fewest chances in the Premier League last weekend, Stoke. I mean, it's not really Stoke alone if they're not even creating chances, is it?
No, and they've got Bonny now, which should have helped them, but it's not. Not looking
give it
good.
Time. They've literally just got Bonny. So, yeah. You know, you've got to give him a chance. Imbula, who I think is actually one of the most underrated players in the Premier League, I think he's no one's created more take-ons or something like that since he came.
No one's won more take-ons.
One more take-ons since he arrived halfway through last season. So they've got interesting players that can do things. You just got to give him time to click. I mean, yeah, I don't really think it's as bad as people make it out. Mark Hughes has got the players. He's often been shown to have the right tactics. So, yeah, get off his back, guys. Yeah. Come on.
But getting off Mark Hughes, I wouldn't want to be on Mark Hughes' bike.
Bike?
Oh, well, maybe his bike. Wouldn't want to be on Mark Hughes' back. He looks like
there are some
he
lovely
could knock me out.
Around the Potteries.
No
lovely
problem.
Place to cycle if you do fancy going down up there. It's Staffordshire, beautiful country.
I'll make a note of that. Spurs have got Monaco at Wembley this week in the Champions League. Monaco are in great form, unbeaten, top of Ligue 1. They pounded Lille, who are another pretty good team, 4-1 at the weekend. Mo, are Spurs going to potential banana skin in front in their first Champions League game at Wembley, and it's sold out. It's going to be a hell of an atmosphere.
And you know what? I think it'll be a hell of a 0-0 draw as well. I think Monaco are going to come there. They're going to like, you know what? We're not going to lose this game. But, you know, I mean, look, it might actually end up surprisingly being like some massive goal fest. But you've got a great defensive side in Tottenham. You've got a great defensive side in Monaco. I know they pounded Lille, but the most team's strength is their defence, and I think they'll just cancel each other out. Mind you, the last time I predicted that, Leicester and Liverpool went at it hammer and tongs, and only ended 1-1 because Michel Vorm had the game of his life. So what do I know?
What does Mo know? Answers on a postcard, tweets at Squawker. What does Mo know? That's the hashtag, get it trending. West Ham. What is going on at West Ham, Rory? They had a 2-0 lead, and they lost 4-2 to Watford at home at the Olympic Stadium. The fans are fighting. They're getting charged for fighting. Slaven Bilic looks a bit lost. He looks like his hair's growing back, which is very confusing.
I think we might have to become war correspondents in this civil war that's broken out with the West Ham. it's ugly to see in the fans as well. I'm talking about, and that's not helping. I think it reflects on the pitch as well. The atmosphere is just not.
It's just not right.
Dire.
It's bizarrely negative for a club that just got a massive new stadium.
Yeah.
And like are in Europe and.
Well, not anymore.
Well, they were, I suppose.
They were in Europe.
Maybe that's what it was. Maybe they're all just angry they got eliminated from Europe by the same team in the same round again.
I can't wait until the Taxpayers Alliance get on top of them. It's going to be great, isn't it?
The Taxpayers Alliance?
Yeah.
Is that like the worst Marvel film ever?
No.
It's a thing.
It's a thing. As soon as they realise how bad West Ham are using the opportunity to be this great, you know, forward-thinking team in the Olympic Stadium, and they're not, oh, mate, just imagine the Newsnight episode is going to be. Kirsty Walk. Taxpayers Alliance, Slaven Bilic. Oh.
Although once Sofyan Feghouli gets up and rolling, I think they could actually an uptick in their form. Although to be fair, that's not going to help stop them from conceding four goals to Watford.
Like, yeah,
what the hell was that?
But from a neutral point of view, we get to see more Rabona assists from Dimitri Payet. Exactly. I mean, that was a moment of magic, wasn't it?
Oh, it's perfect. I think Payet coming back, showing exactly what West Ham have missed. I think it's just the back for West Ham is not great still. It's, you know, James Collins having a little flap at it.
There's something missing there, right? It's like something broke.
Carlos Bacca's missing. They didn't sign him.
Sign the Bacca. Yeah. Back the Bacca. Let's round off the Premier League games. I mean, so much to talk about. Bournemouth 1, West Brom 0. Quick stat about that. Callum Wilson scored 6 goals from his 10 shots on target in the Premier League. Middlesbrough lost to Crystal Palace 2-1.
And Benteke there. Ooh.
Burnley, yeah, Benteke. What a towering header that was. Mm. And Burnley drew 1-1 with Hull. Curtis Davies again, most interceptions this weekend with 10. Any other notable points we want to pick out from...
Curtis Davies for England. That's the notable point.
It does make sense, doesn't it? He's of age.
He's better than Gary Cahill.
He's younger than Gary Cahill.
He's of age, yes.
He's of age.
Yeah. Davies and Stones sounds great. Sounds like a detective agency.
Davies and Stones, yeah, back to the 70s. Here we go. Let's talk a little bit about Sunderland versus Everton. That's happening tonight. And I mean, there's just so many things to talk about when you look at Sunderland versus Everton. Rory, I'll come to you first, because I know you're dying to talk about it. Itching. Sunderland versus Everton, what do we reckon? Moyes welcoming his old side, as it were.
Moyes, it's all about Moyes. When he returned as Man United boss to Everton, didn't work out both times, lost. It's going to be the same story, I think. I think Koeman's just made Everton a much, much better side, much more competent. And Sunderland, I think Defoe, if without Defoe, it's still not going to work.
Four words for you. Triple captain, Jermaine Defoe. So, this is the kind of game where, I mean, Moyes said, I could have won the Premier League if I just had the right striker. Now, he's not going to win the Premier League with Sunderland, but he's definitely going to win survival from relegation because Jermaine Defoe just makes things happen. He is brilliant.
He's Jermaine Man.
He is Jermaine Man.
Oh. Rory, how could you?
Yeah. I think everyone's expecting Everton to absolutely do Sunderland, and I just think Yanazai is going to do something daft, which is going to create a daft goal for Jermaine Defoe, and it's going to be a daft win for Moyes. It's going to be daft as whatever it is. It's going to be great.
No, I think Mason Holgate's gone on toast.
Oh, maybe. Mm. He's in my fantasy team as well, though, so it'll be all right. Either way.
Get your teeth ready. Mo, what do you reckon to that?
I'm just in awe of these two and the
punnage.
The punnage the lines they've come out with. I think...
We only prepared this half an hour before coming in here, so this is impressive.
Everton are a better side than Sunderland, but you know Greg's right that Jermaine Defoe just finds a way to get stuff done. But I think Everton have so much talent in their side that really there's no excuse if they don't win this game. Even given the Defoe get stuff doneness, I don't think we have that in our comparison matrix, do we?
No, but we don't. We like to call it performance score.
Oh, I like it. You're all at it. I'm completely being outshone here. No, look, the Everton should win this game. They've got all the better players. They've got Bolasie, they've got Lukaku, they kept Lukaku, they've got Barkley. You know, they lost Stones, they've got Williams. They've got the talent. They've got a solid coach. There really is no excuse here, but there is this nagging feeling.
Monday nights, slip-ups.
Funny story coming into this game, actually, that Lukaku and Morales, coming back from Belgium duty from Cyprus, tried to get their private jet trip, their flight, paid for by the club. The club weren't having any of it, so they had to fork out $13,000 for it. And apparently, according to the Daily Mirror, that Lukaku's not very happy about it.
Well, Burnley paid for Stephen Defoe's ticket, so they're kind of thinking, like, well, Burnley going to pay for that? You know, we're Everton.
Just that sentence is so absurd that Burnley paid for Stephen Defoe to take a private jet back from Cyprus.
It's
an astonishing...
Yeah,
astonishing.
United paid for their players too, so did Liverpool. So I think they're kind of feeling like, we've got Mashari now. Why isn't he buying an airport?
They've got money. What's going on there? That's not. Mm. I mean, it's purely from a
shed a tear.
Purely from a taking care of your players perspective. Like your star striker is coming from international duty. Take care of him.
They have just had to pay Roberto Martinez $10 million though. So maybe kind of thought, well, maybe if you're on the plane as well, we don't.
Yeah,
that
payout has got to hurt. Let's take a look around Europe. And I think where we've got to start is the big headline news is Barcelona losing a game to Alaves. Mo, what on earth happened there?
Luis Enrique rotated his entire defence, and the rotation of players he brought in consisted of a short defender, a 32-year-old smoker, and two fullbacks, who one of whom was a converted winger. You know, it just the defence let them down in massive individual mistakes. It wasn't some Alaves defended very manfully, defended well, shut Barcelona down that end, and you know, but that's happened before. Barcelona always grab a goal here, a goal there, and they'll go on with it. What changes normally is at the back they stop the other team from scoring, and in this instance they actually actively helped Alaves score goals. Just Alex Vidal, I mean, you know, he this should have been his chance. Him and Sergio Roberto, they were on level footing to compete for Dani Alves' job. He's been blown out of the water. Javier Mascherano just keeps looking like a 33-year-old defensive midfielder playing centre back. And Mascherano,
that is what he is.
And yeah, well, exactly. No, but I mean, until like a year ago, he didn't look like that. He looked like a central defender. You're like, wow, this guy's amazing. Mm. Now he's starting to show his age. And Jeremy Mathieu is just an absolute disaster.
He is a bit of a disaster.
The only reason he's not a worse signing than Thomas and Marlon is because he's actually managed to play games. I mean, he actually scored the goal, which was funny. But then he also missed a sitter, which could have made it 2-1. And then like a minute later, it was he just stood there and watched while Alaves made it 1-2. It's terrible.
It's quite something, and it does feel like there's a bit of a shift in power in Spain. Real Madrid, Zizou's Real Madrid, Greg. Oui. 15 La Liga wins in a row.
Uh-huh.
Ronaldo back from injury, scores within 6 minutes thanks to a Gareth Bale assist. Does it look like there's an era of dominance that Zidane's basically building over there?
Nah, it won't go that far. It's been a good few weeks, though, hasn't it? Like, they've got 15th La Liga win in a row for Zidane. If he gets one more, it'll equal, I think, Barcelona's record, won't he?
Yeah, and it'll be the record, and it will get the win because Espanyol are just terrible.
Mm. So yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, times are good at Real Madrid, but I think it's a bit early to be talking about eras of dominance.
They've had a really good run of games, but essentially they've not really played, apart from Barcelona, who collapsed spectacularly, they've not really played anyone great in that run. It's like that, and Zidane is what I would call, he's a lucky coach. He's not a great coach yet. He will be, I think. He's very young.
He deserves credit for winning quite a Champions League.
No. That's what I mean. But I mean, it's like in terms of what you would call a good tactician, he regularly gets tactically outthought. His teams get outplayed, but he finds a way to motivate his players in such a way that they get the win. They always seem to pull it out of the bag. Like against Sevilla and Super Cup, 92nd minute, they're losing. Ramos scores the equaliser and then score an absolutely wonderful goal to win it from Daniel Carvajal. This weekend, you know, he makes some changes and they just absolutely, you know, Danilo is letting Osasuna have loads of space on the break, and then he scores the second goal. You know, they find a way to get the win.
I mean, you got Bale, and you've also got James Rodriguez, who Perez hasn't given up on the idea of him becoming the new Ronaldo when Ronaldo finally falls away. But you've also got Mateo Kovacic, you've got Asensio as well. They've got players who are young enough that, you know, they've got a few years in them, so we'll see how it goes.
They've tied Toni Kroos down until 2020, which is obviously a massive, massive deal for him. Moving over to Serie A, Francesco Totti, literally the last remaining sort of real romantic story that we have. He scored to make it 23 seasons in a row with a Serie A goal. Greg, just a legend, isn't he? There's no other word for it.
Totti the Eternal, isn't it? It's just, you know, when he retires, I think a little bit of football is going to die. So,
Retire, Francesco Totti. We don't want that.
It's difficult for me to really put into words on a podcast what Totti is, what he means. He's a cult figure, but he's just, he's like the last great playmaker in some ways. He's wonderful. He's beautiful. Mm. Just, yeah.
Last great playmaker, last great one-club man. I mean, you know, he's knocked Giggsy's consecutive scoring seasons record out of the park. You know, Giggsy had, like, 21, I think. You know, he's got 23. You look at the video of him scoring his first goal, and football is completely different back then in the 90s. You know, he's been a gift. He's been a great playmaker. You know, he stayed loyal to Roma, turned down offers from Real Madrid, from Juventus, from Milan. You know, stayed with Roma, and that's something that really needs to be commended. And you know,
last few seasons as well, like the goals he has scored haven't been like tokens. Like they've often been really important. Mm. I mean, like this weekend, it was, you know, it wasn't like
it was a winning goal.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. And
absolutely
last season, he kept coming off the bench and just making things happen.
Unless we forget, he was the one, not Lionel Messi. He was the one who brought the false nine to our eyes.
It's a shame that he won't be playing Champions League football this season.
It really is. Yeah.
Maybe he will next season. Maybe he'll keep going. Yeah. He was intimating afterwards. Bloody hell, so much football, eh?
More to go, yeah.
Blubberneck. Balotelli.
Oh yeah,
Mario Balotelli.
The man.
Greg looks like he's lost the will to narrative.
No. I was fully on board with narrative last night, and it completely delivered. So
Mario Balotelli. We were both tweeting basically the exact same things during the BT Sports sort of European football avalanche in the afternoon. Balotelli played very, very well.
Yeah.
Which is, he didn't just get two goals for Nice in his debut versus Marseille in a 3-2 win. He actually played well, didn't he?
Seven shots, none of which are off target. Three of them were blocked, but they were blocked because they were going to be on target. He was really good. He opened the score in 7 minutes in from the spot, but he could have had a goal moments before that when cross flashed across goal, and he was right there. He was like an inch away. And he was brilliant. He was absolutely brilliant. He might not have scored the winner, but he scored the equaliser, he scored the opener, and he set the platform out for Nice, and he looked like a constant threat all the time. Just the way he kind of strolls elegantly and regally around the pitch. I mean, it's going to annoy fans when your club aren't doing well, but he's just... he's just got that quality, and he's a bit like Berbatov, a bit like Ibrahimovic. He's just like this classic centre forward who just makes it count when he's on form. Yeah.
Rory, is there any chance that, you know, is it Balotelli finding his form again, finally feeling happy, or is it more to do with Ligue 1 being, let's face it, not as strong a league as the Premier League or maybe Serie A, where he's been trying in the past couple of seasons?
I mean, you'd hope that he has another level to him than Ligue 1. You think he'd have a good season this time, and then another big club will take him up at the end of the season, but he's still such a risk. Even if he scored over like 10 goals, it'd still be a risk.
No, I think this is his level. I think he needs to... Everyone keeps saying, oh, he needs to play for a big club. I think he needs to make a medium big club a big club. I think that's the best level for him. I think he's finally wearing a big boy shirt number now. None of that 45 nonsense.
Big boy shirt number.
Which is what?
Nine.
He's wearing you know, proper shirt number now. He's not messing around. This is his level. I think everyone, you know, where he needs to be the focal point of a side. If he goes to a big club, he's not going to be the focal point, and then that's when he starts to languish around, doesn't look as great. If he goes to a club like this with ambition, with ability, and he takes them into the big time, that's his level. That's perfect for him.
I think his level was scoring two goals against Germany in the Euros, and that was one of the best centre-forward performances I've seen in ages. He was awesome.
You still believe in Mario, don't you?
I still fully believe in Mario Balotelli. The thing that made him so good last night wasn't just that, oh, it's a big game, oh, it's his debut, oh, it's a derby. Nice played a two-striker system, and Balotelli's a bit of a throwback. He's a bit of an old-school player in that extent. He was never really going to get that at Liverpool, not properly. So I think that playing at Nice, playing a two-striker system, which is kind of coming back in vogue in a lot of places, that could be key, not so much Nice and the platform provided by it.
So we've spoken a bit about the English clubs from the Premier League that are going to be playing in the Champions League this week. Are there any other ties we're looking forward to? Maybe Juve versus Sevilla?
Juve versus Sevilla should be really good. Should be a fascinating battle. But I'm really looking forward to Barcelona versus Celtic because...
Why?
Well, because it's always good value. Celtic are always good value. And I just like seeing Brendan Rodgers get beaten around, you know.
Oh, that's mean. Poor Brendan. He picked up a crucial win at the weekend.
They were brilliant at the weekend. Moussa Dembele was incredible. I'd love to see Moussa Dembele actually run against Barcelona's defence, which is obviously going to be coming off a bit of a, you know, the loss. I'd love to see what they can do on the counter-attack. I think they could actually, I mean, they'll still lose probably, but, you know, hey, Alaves won at the camp now. Why can't Celtic?
Greg, any Champions League ties that you're looking forward to specifically?
Yeah, there's a couple. I've quite like the look of PSV versus Atletico.
Niche tie.
Cocu versus Simeone. I think two great managers, two teams that understand their manager systems. Could be a kind of a, you know, an underground hit, if you will.
Rematch from last week, last season.
Yeah, absolutely. And also Bruges versus Leicester City. Leicester City's first one. And that's also a winnable game for them. Yeah. Bruges, a lovely city for the away fans as well, you know. Foxes on tour. It's going to be, yeah.
In Bruges. Yeah,
in Bruges. Foxes,
yeah. I mean, Leicester City fans are going to be delirious to be out in Bruges. Hopefully less Colin Farrell and nature of that of business of that nature. Rory, any Champions League ties that you're looking for? You've got your eye on? There's 16 to choose from.
No, I still think Juve Sevilla is great because there's so many new players for each side. You know, you got from Sevilla Ganso, you got Sampaoli, new manager. Then we've got Higuain, and then you got Pjanic for Juve. So I think that's going to be. I mean, that probably should be like a Europa League final. But
Juve won't like that.
Yeah, I know they won't. But that, I think, for Sevilla, it's new territory. Without a great manager and Emery. So there's so much to play for in that, so much to the uncertainties.
And a very, very motivated-looking Gonzalo Higuain, who picked up two fantastic goals at the weekend. That's all the time we've got for this week. Can you believe it? So much football that we didn't even get to touch upon. We'll be back on Thursday with more Squawker Talker action. In the meantime, please follow us on Twitter and subscribe on iTunes. We'll see you very soon.